Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca, Mesut Özil,
el centro del alemán, vuelve, gol, gol, gol.
Extra.
Hello there and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnar Blog. Goodly, holy fucking shit, that was great morning to you.
I think that is the appropriate catchphrase for today, isn't it?
Yeah, wow. I think this could be a good podcast.
You know. It should be. I mean, I don't want to jinx it at this early stage, but all the ingredients are there.
They certainly are. We're alive. Stuff happened yesterday. That was good. People are generally happy. And, you know, I think as well, part of what makes football great is that you can sort of go to the dark side, you know, to get in on the Star Wars thing very early, you know, using the Force and being good and all is great. But sometimes you have to let the anger go through you, right?
Yeah.
And I think, and I'll expand on this a little bit later on, I think I've got somebody else to be angry at. I'm feeling the anger flowing through me in a very positive way, of course, positive anger. But I'll explain more a bit later on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right. I look forward to it.
All right. So anyway, how are you? Because obviously, when we spoke last week, you were heading off to Calais to do some very noble work. How was your week there?
It was fascinating, I'll be honest with you. Yeah, it was really interesting. I was not online much, quite disconnected from football for 7 days, which is not always a bad thing. Sometimes it's nice to come back with it with a fresh perspective, and I think it probably made me enjoy yesterday all the more. But really, yeah, obviously, you know, quite troubling in some respects and people living in very difficult circumstances, but also very heartwarming to see how resilient they are and the way that other people are sort of getting involved and helping out. And, you know, thank you very much to those who donated via the page. I was really, really touched by that. A lot of Arsenal fans. And I can assure you it all went to helping those people, and they were massively, massively appreciative. And if you are considering going out and volunteering in Calais or Dunkirk or anywhere, do it. It's very easy. There's a lot of infrastructure in Calais particularly that allows you to do it without any trouble. Get out there, get a ferry, and see what you can do to help, because it is selfishly quite rewarding as well.
Well, there you go. Well, fantastic. That's good to hear. And it's nice to make a difference, you know, and to sort of step out of this weird bubble that we live in, you know, and look at the what's going on.
A little bit. Saying that, don't think that in any way it diminished my enjoyment of the Leicester game.
No.
It's not like I came back with some sort of perspective of, oh, maybe football isn't that important. It felt hugely important.
It really did feel hugely important, didn't it? There was just something about the way that people stayed in the stadium. Did you get to the game, or did you just have to watch it on TV? Or?
I didn't get to it. In fact, I watched on TV in the first 20 minutes of the game. I had to watch on sort of times 30 fast forward in order to catch up as live. So that was a frenetic experience.
Wow, who knew Giroud was so fast? Look
exactly.
At the pace he's got.
Yeah, exactly that. But it does spare me the commentary, which is sometimes a blessing.
Mm.
And then I was watching it live, you know, for the remainder of the game. And I mean, it was I don't know. It felt like a it feels like one of those games that we'll remember. Hopefully we'll remember it for a long, long time, you know?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the way people stayed in the stadium afterwards to sing, I posted a video of it. If you want to see on today's blog, you can scroll down and there's a linky there to some post-match singing, you know? And it really did. It felt like something big had happened. Because something big did happen, obviously, and, you know, a last-minute winner in I won't say vaguely contentious circumstances, but, you know, there were irritations throughout that game that we'll touch on, of course. But, you know, what a goal and what a guy to get the goal as well. Danny Welbeck, 10 months out with injury. I mean, you couldn't write the script. Well, you could write the script, but someone would say, hey, that script is hackneyed and clichéd, so stick it up your bum.
Yeah, you could write the script, but you'd never get the film made.
No.
I think, it just was... It was too perfect, wasn't it? I mean, he came on. He wasn't even expected to be in the match day squad. There was all the talk prior to the game about how Hull was going to be his comeback. But I saw, I think you've tweeted, was it Mikel Arteta's programme notes?
Yeah.
Saying how effective he'd been in training, and Arsene Wenger seconding that sentiment, really. And clearly it was enough to get him included in the squad. And what an impact he had. I mean, both goals, in fact, coming from substitutes in the end.
Yeah, yeah, which is, you know, good work. And I think Arsene Wenger talked about Welbeck saying, oh, well, I wasn't sure, but like the way he trained the last couple of days, I thought, oh, I'll just include him in the squad. And the benefits of having, you know, good attacking options on the bench are pretty obvious. But look, let's go at it, will we, in terms of how will we do it? Will we go sort of from first half to second half? I mean...
Chronologically,
yes, we'll do it that way. We'll do it that way. All right, I mean, first half I thought was fairly even. I thought we started, you know, quite brightly, and then, you know, the game was pretty even between both sides. Petr Cech made a couple of really, really good saves in that first half. I think when you look back at the game, you're obviously thinking of the Walcott goal, you're thinking of the red card, you're thinking of Welbeck's goal, you're thinking of a couple of other contentious moments. But two big saves in that first half, one from a Vardy header where he got down really quickly, and there was another one where I think the guy was crossing it, but it was one of those crosses that can catch goalkeepers out because it was curling into the top corner, and you know, he just stuck his big hand out and pushed it around. So Petr Cech had a big part to play in that first half.
Absolutely. I thought the Vardy save was particularly good because it wasn't just the initial start, which was showed impressive reflexes low down to his near post, but the way he gathered the ball up afterwards as well, because Vardy was there waiting for the rebound. And I thought in the first half we saw sort of why Leicester are in the position they're in. They are defensively very solid and they do have that threat of pace on the break. And I think we saw that exemplified on a couple of a cage. From what I could tell, I mean, as I say, the first 20 minutes I didn't see in detail, but I didn't feel necessarily like our game particularly clicked as we might hope going forward.
No, I mean, we started really brightly. I think the first couple of minutes we had a chance where there was a low Oxlade-Chamberlain cross. But yeah, you can see Leicester are very well organised and what have you. Should we have had a penalty? The handball?
I don't know. I think that might have been a bit harsh. What about yourself?
I think normally when a player is standing with his arms by his side, it's very difficult to give it. But to me, having watched the replays, it looks as if he moves, you know, his body or his arm in the direction of the ball. And to me, that made it a little bit more obvious. So I don't know. I mean, you've seen them given for that. I mean, I remember there was one in the Invincible season where I think it was Alan Stubbs playing for Everton. He had his arms down by his side and Henry basically kicked the ball at his hand. And we got a penalty for that. So you've seen those kind of things given. And I think there was a definite movement towards the ball from, I think it was Kante, was it?
Yeah, I believe so. Mm. But I mean, yeah, you do see those given. For me, that would have been a little bit harsh, but I'm sure we'll come on to the referee.
He
might get a mention, mightn't he?
Yes, we might get onto the subject of the referee. I'm just trying to correct your phrasing here. So okay, well look, let's do it then, because for me the penalty given just before halftime, that drove me fucking mad, because there was a clear foul on Mesut Ozil at the top end of the pitch.
Yes, I think that was beyond any debate, that one.
Yeah, well, not in the mind of Martin Atkinson. And then, of course, Leicester break up the other end and then they win themselves a penalty.
So, come on, then. How do you see that one? I mean, I think that's a tricky one. What do you think?
I think that the attacker initiates the contact with the defender. Now, I don't think it was the greatest piece of defending from Monreal, but I think ultimately what it is he leaves his leg there, Vardy kicks it, and make sure that he goes tumbling into it and goes over. Some people will say that's clever forward play, and I think that it's one of those things that people who are paid to talk about football and write about football ought to highlight as just basic cheating, because that's what it is. Like, if a defender kicks the legs out from an attacker in the box, that's a penalty. But if an attacker kicks the defender and then falls over, it doesn't really matter what position the defender's in. That's got nothing to do with it. If the attacker is the one that's initiating the contact and then tumbles to the ground, it's basically cheating. And I didn't think it was a penalty.
I think you're right. The attacker definitely initiates it. The defender leaves himself vulnerable, I suppose, by the nature of his challenge and the way he kind of turns into the tackle. But... a generous pundit would say he won himself a penalty, but really, is that within the rules? Is that certainly not within the spirit of the game? But I know that might make me sound like a bit of a sentimentalist.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think if an Arsenal player did it, I'd like to think that I would recognise that they were trying something on, basically, and that, you know, some referees will fall for it, but that if they do give a penalty, that is what they've done. They've been duped.
Mm. Yeah, look, you know, we see referees give those kind of penalties all the time. To me, it's almost exactly the same as the one, you know, where a player goes through, the goalkeeper comes out, and the player then falls into the goalkeeper without the goalkeeper touching them. Like Rooney did it to us, I think, one time at Old Trafford. He went over Almunia, I think, and got a penalty that way. That one drives me fucking mad as well. It's not a penalty because there's been no contact to take the player down or no obstruction when they could easily get out of the way.
I mean, effectively, it's just running into somebody, isn't it? I mean, watching the replays of the Vardy incident, the position he puts his left leg in is completely unnatural.
Yeah.
It makes no sense for a guy who's trying to dribble around a player. He throws his leg directly across Monreal. I mean, it's there's no doubt that he knows what he's trying to do. It's I suppose the question is that legal within the laws of the game?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think we have to call into question the character of Vardy here, to be perfectly honest. Maybe he thought Monreal was a Japanese casino goer. I don't know. Just wanted to get some revenge, you know?
He has always seemed like such a nice guy to everybody, but there you go.
So look, they score a penalty just before halftime. The
smashed
booze,
it, didn't he?
Yeah, he was always going to. Yeah, I mean, look, he finishes like that. The boos for the referee as he came off the pitch at halftime were really quite something. In the stadium, I don't think I've heard officials get it like that for a very long time, if to that level ever before. So we come out for the second half, and obviously Martin Atkinson has gone, well, these people don't seem to like me. I don't know why. What could it be that has turned them against me, this top-class referee that I am? I might make some decisions in their favour and see what happens. The first free kick he gave to us, it was like we'd scored a goal. The cheer that went up, it was like...
you could hear
amazing.
It on the TV.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I mean, you know, he hadn't endeared himself to the crowd, had he? And I'm glad they let him know about it. I mean, how much, if any, impact do you think that had on the sending off? Do you think that's a sending off on any day, or do you think there was a sense of him trying to even things up at all?
I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine that if 60,000 people boo a referee off at halftime, that he's then inclined to do you any favours at all. He's probably thinking, fuck you. That's what I'd think.
Yeah.
You know, certainly, I would be, if I was a referee, I would be one spiteful bastard. I really would. You know, I would. If they booed me off at halftime, I'd be like, yeah. Wait and you see. I'm going to do something outrageous. Like,
wait till you see the second half.
Yeah. Give a goal kick when one of their players clearly boots it out for a corner, something like that. You know, I would be ridiculously spiteful. So I'm sure Martin Atkinson, you know, as a professional, was able to put that to one side and just referee the game in the way that he thought fit. Now, whether that's good enough or I don't know. I'm not here to say, but it wasn't.
Yeah. I mean, no, I agree. And did you think it was a justified sending off then?
Well, I can't remember why he got booked for the first one.
I can't either, no. I don't think anyone knows.
I know that he did get booked, but, you know, in the fuzz of everything from yesterday, I can't remember why. The second one, you would say perhaps it's a little bit soft, but basically it's a fairly deliberate cynical foul, and he's pulling Giroud down and trying to sort of use his body to shield the fact that he's done it. But it was sort of half a rugby tackle when you look back at it. So, tough shit. You know how you don't get a second yellow card? You don't do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, look, obviously it changed the game to a certain extent. But I think Leicester were quite lucky to remain with only 10 men on the pitch. Could have been 9.
Yes. There were some ugly challenges out
there. So, yeah. So do you want me to get on the anger thing now? Will I do the anger thing?
Yeah, why not?
Right, okay, so here's the thing, right? We've looked at what Leicester have done this season, and it's been remarkable from a footballing perspective. It's been, I guess, very entertaining for the neutral. You know, they've come from the bottom of the table, they're leading the Premier League, Claudio Ranieri's a nice man, and, you know, they've played some good attacking football and got some amazing results, and everybody, to a certain extent, enjoys the whole underdog fairy tale side of things, right?
Mm.
Now, after yesterday, I'm in very much fuck Leicester mood. Like, fuck them. Fuck them, fuck them, fuck them. Because, A, right? We're going to have a protest at Sky. The away end was full, like about 10 minutes before kickoff. There wasn't any protest whatsoever. So fuck right. them for that.
Okay.
Like, I mean, that's fine. That's their choice, but fuck them for that. The dive, the Vardy thing, you know, That's a thing that doesn't work in their favour. The constant gamesmanship and time-wasting that went on yesterday, Kasper Schmeichel taking an hour practically for every goal kick that he took out. Then there was this the tackle by Drinkwater on Ramsey, which was absolutely horrendous. I don't know if you've seen it or if people out there haven't seen the replays, but if you go to the Arseblog Facebook page, you'll find a screenshot of it there. Basically, he goes in over the top of the ball. He sort of catches Ramsey, studs up between the knee and the ankle, and Ramsey's really, really lucky that he wasn't badly injured for a second time in his career. What else annoyed me about them?
What about Riyad Mahrez? He'd had a little dive.
Yeah,
he had
a dive as well. And that, you know, from where I was sitting, I was like, "Oh fuck!" Because that looked to me more like a penalty than the Vardy one.
Yeah.
So they're divers, cheats. They try and maim Aaron Ramsey, and basically they were fucking really annoying all day. So basically now they're on my list. They're on the list. That's it.
Okay.
That's it. I'm buying into this fairy tale bullshit no longer. They can fuck off and head their way down the league where they belong.
Fine. Okay. Well, I'm glad that we've arrived at that point. I wondered if they might, you know, extend the fairy tale a little longer, but it seems that yesterday has killed any magic in it for you, and they are now a target.
Yes, they're bastards. They're just complete bastards.
What about Claudio Ranieri, though? He's so cute.
I do like him still. He's a gentleman and a nice man, but, you know, I...
Recently in an interview, I heard him call Danny Drinkwater Drinky. And if you can imagine Ranieri saying, Drinky is a good player, it's a very endearing little phrase. But as for Drinkwater himself,
no, that was
less time for him.
Well, absolutely no time for him. Because, I mean, that was just a really bad tackle. Apparently on Match of the Day last night, they were criticising Ramsey's reaction to that foul. Mm. I haven't seen it yet, but a lot of people said that Danny Murphy in particular was critical of Ramsey and said that Drinkwater was just trying to protect himself. Which, you know, if I was going onto a football pitch with a, you know, let's say a cutlass and, sure, you know, one of those balls that they swing around which has all spikes in it, like, I'm just protecting myself.
Exactly. Carrying a gun, a firearm, in a way, it's just for protection.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so you can... You can look at it from that point of view, but I'm, you know, that's it. I'm done with the whole Leicester thing now, and I hope everyone beats them between now and the end of the season.
Well, I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
I'm sure they will. That'd be good for our title hopes as well. Yes. So, you know.
So, okay. So, look, Arsene Wenger sometimes criticised for his substitutions.
Or lack thereof.
Or the timely manner of them. But yesterday, Coquelin, having been booked in the first half, got involved with Mahrez when he was walking off the pitch a bit too slowly for Coquelin's liking.
Yeah, he wasn't happy, was he, for yesterday?
You know,
but you like to see a bit of that, I think.
Yeah, you like to see a little bit of that, but you know what you don't want is to give a referee like Martin Atkinson any excuse.
Ammunition.
That's the word exactly that I was looking for. And it was quite funny actually when they were taking Coquelin off. A couple of minutes later, Arsene Wenger said, okay, A, we need a goal, and B, Coquelin's probably, you know, on a knife edge here with the referee, so I'll take him off. And he saw his number come up and went, oh, it was a little bit like, oh, and then he remembered, hey, I was really critical, I was giving out to Mahrez, I better get off as quickly as I can. And he sprinted like crazy over to the sideline, so that was quite funny.
But Theo Walcott came on, and I mean, he got the goal, didn't he? I mean, I guess that's what you're asking for from him.
Yeah, you know, really tidy finish. Great knockdown from Giroud.
I thought Giroud had a really good game, actually.
Yeah.
Across the whole 90 minutes. I'm not saying that I've heard many pundits, at least on the telly, pick up on, but he was very unfortunate not to score on a couple of occasions. And the second half in particular provided a real focal point for the attack.
That was a brilliant save, actually. One, like, in the last few minutes, Schmeichel.
Oh, yeah.
My goodness, what a good save that was.
Very strong hands.
But, you know, fuck him, because he took ages and ages and ages over his goal kicks, and we scored with the last kick of the game. There is something just beautiful about that. You know, that team that wastes time, and then all of a sudden they need some time, and all the time is gone. Ha-ha. But, I think you're right about Giroud, because... He really, really worked hard, and he dropped really deep at times to come back and try and win the ball. You know, and I think we needed him to be that effective yesterday, because I thought Mesut Ozil struggled a bit. I didn't think he was, you know, at his best.
No.
And I didn't think Alexis was at his best either. So to have the centre forward really put in a shift the way that he did. And of course, nobody else is going to be able to nod that ball down into the path of Walcott the way that he did. There isn't another player on our side who could do that. And that's part of what makes him a very effective centre forward. Good finish from Walcott too. I thought Walcott was quite bright when he came on as well.
Yeah, he was, and back on the right-hand side. Been a while since we've seen him there. And I thought he did relatively well. Giroud, really smart knockdown, and Walcott did well. We talked last week, he's barely scored recently. I think it was, you know, something like 16, 17 games with just the one goal.
Mm.
So good to see him finishing confidently in that situation.
Yes. So then, it's 1-1, and we're sort of heading into the final 20 minutes, and then the final 15 minutes, and the final 10 minutes, and he brings on Welbeck, and, you know, we had 24 shots on goal yesterday. 9 of those came in the final 9 minutes of normal time, plus injury time. So, you know, the addition of the extra striker and all the forwards. I mean, think about the way that we finished that game. We have Ramsey and Ozil as a double pivot in midfield, and then you've got Alexis on the left, Walcott on the right, Giroud and Welbeck up front, Bellerin bombing down overlapping, basically Mertesacker and Chambers sitting on Vardy for when if they try to break forward. Chambers was good, wasn't he, when he came on? Did well.
Yeah, I thought he did do well, because he's not the quickest either alongside Mertesacker, and you slightly feared for them with Vardy, you know, allowed to sort of roam free. But I thought they marshalled him pretty well in that second half.
So, yeah, so we're heading into this, you know, final few minutes, and there was there were chances. Alexis had one. There was Giroud, that save. There's a great picture of Giroud actually trying a scissors kick as well at one point. I think Giroud had a couple of headers.
Ramsey had a couple of chances.
Yeah, Ramsey,
I think.
And Mertesacker's header, just dribbled wide.
Oh.
And you're looking at it going, oh my God, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
So what was the feeling in the ground? Did you feel like it could still happen? Or was there a sense of anticipation? Was everyone sticking around, or had people given up on it? What was the
It was good. You know, I think there are always some people who leave before the final whistle. I don't understand why. I mean, what they missed out yesterday was, you know, a truly exceptional moment. from a footballing point of view and from an Arsenal fans' point of view, I think. You know, it just felt like something really great had happened inside the ground. But I was confident. I was saying to the person I was sitting with, I was going, yep, there's a goal in this. We're going to get another goal. We're going to get another goal. And then, of course, by the 94th minute, I was going, maybe we won't.
when the equaliser went in and they were down to 10 men and they were so long in the game, you really felt like this was Arsenal's to win. But
yeah,
as time ticked away, obviously that hope faded somewhat. And what Leicester, to give them some credit, did defend well, I think.
Yes, they did. They did. But, you know, the more we press forward, the more chances we created, the more space there was in the centre. And, you know, ultimately it was another set piece. I know we get criticised quite a lot for our set pieces, but we score quite a lot of goals from set pieces this season.
And also the way it came about. I mean, I'm pretty sure it was Nacho Monreal who got fouled.
Flattened, didn't he?
Flattened by Vasilevsky. But I thought, having sort of suffered, you know, with the penalty kick in the first half, Monreal, he showed real tenacity and real bravery to go into that challenge and win that free kick. And I think it should be remembered the part he played in helping get us that winner in the end.
Yeah. I mean, it was a ridiculous challenge. I thought he'd taken his head off. We thought, looking at it, I was going, oh, shit, he's out cold.
Yeah,
you know, and at that point, I didn't think there would even be time. You know, I think if Leicester had cleared the ball there, then that probably would have been that.
Well, we were past 94 minutes at this point.
Right. OK, I obviously didn't have a clock because, you know, they don't show the number of minutes of injury time on the clock in the stadium. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it had to be that moment. And it was. A number of people suggested to me that there were shades of Alan Smith at Anfield 89.
Not a dissimilar goal, yeah. Not too dissimilar. Mm. You know, a great delivery from Ozil and a faint touch, but a definite touch from Welbeck.
Mm.
And, I mean, the celebrations were brilliant. Well, I mean, they haven't seen much like that at the Emirates Stadium, to be honest, in its young life.
Yeah, look, just absolutely outstanding because, you know, winning a game we knew we had to win. The importance of that was there. The fact that we'd sort of overcome this displeasure, disenchantment with the referee. People were very frustrated with Leicester because they were doing everything that they could do to annoy us, as you would if you were a team in their position. But fuck them. I just want to make that clear again. Fuck them,
yeah.
You know. You know, so all that. And then for the guy to get the goal is Danny Welbeck, who's been out for 10 months, hasn't played in the first team. I think he had 45 minutes of an under-21 game. He's on as a substitute. Like, he'd been warming up for, I'd say, the best part of half an hour before he came on. Right. He was, you know, doing little bits of running. But, you know, by the time he'd been told to go on, he was just sort of doing stretches and, you know, getting his muscles all warmed up. And for him to come on then and do that, I think that just added an extra layer of awesomeness to it.
It really did. It felt like a really special moment. And I think, I really hope that, you know, come May, we're looking back at it as a pivotal point in this title race, because it feels like that. It feels like something that could be a catalyst and ignite our challenge now. And I think we've needed it because it's actually been a really tricky period. You know, we've not been in great form over the last few weeks. Had we failed to beat Leicester, especially with the Tottenham result, I think yesterday would have been a very dispiriting day.
Yeah.
Instead, it's really injected some life into proceedings. And I think that added element of it being such a feel-good story for Danny Welbeck has just taken it to another level. And what an interesting time he's had at Arsenal. He hasn't played for a year, but he scored that goal yesterday, scored the winner at Old Trafford in the FA Cup on the way to winning that last year. There have been some big contributions alongside the long absence.
Yeah, no, it's great. And, you know, I think he's obviously a very useful guy to have in the squad because he gives you a different kind of an option. You know, for him to score that header goal, he scored a brilliant header as well, didn't he, before against... West Brom,
I think you might be right. Yeah, from a Cazorla cross on the left.
Yeah, you know, so he's good in the air as well. And obviously, he's quick and he's strong, and you know, he's got that nice sort of a combo Walcott Giroud quality to him. You know, that he's got the pace of Walcott, or maybe not quite as quick, but also good centre forward play. And that was a really, really good header, I think.
Yeah. It was. And also, as you alluded to, I think just having the ability to bring on a second kind of pure centre forward. I mean, I know he dropped deep quite a lot yesterday by necessity in that last 10 minutes. But being able to have a second guy in the penalty box did create a significant amount of chaos. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily slight Welbeck by referring to the sort of Yaya FA Cup final, but it was a little bit like that. Just the sheer number of bodies made it very difficult for Leicester to deal with.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, just a brilliant way to end the game. And of course, you know, last minute goals just have that something special to them, don't they? They give you that lift.
Yeah, and I think I heard that we hadn't had one in the Premier League, a last minute winner, since the opening day of last season.
Yeah, we were trying to think of like the last time we'd scored a goal that felt like that. And I think, you know, it's whatever about the Ramsey one against Crystal Palace, and that was a late goal. I think there's something a little bit different in terms of the circumstances, because, you know, it was the
it was the
opening day of the season. It's a 1-1. You're going, well, you know, there's still time to recover from this. And then we score a goal and it's great. But this was a game against, you know, the league leaders, a game that we really had to win. We're, you know, playing against 10 men. We'd huffed and puffed. We were battering down the door. And then just eventually you get that goal. The weight of everything just made that, you know, really, really exciting. And it's difficult to think of a last minute goal at home that's had that kind of effect for quite a long time.
The one that jumps out to me, was there a Thomas Vermaelen goal against Newcastle?
Yeah.
I don't remember when that was or what the circumstances were, but I do remember the celebrations.
That was, I mean, but that, how long ago was that now? I'm just going to try and look that up and see
certainly
if I can find it.
Certainly sometime. I think, was it a 1-0 win or something like that? I don't know. It was a big goal at the time and one that we were desperate
for. Yeah, well, it was a good goal as well, wasn't it? Because it was a breakaway, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
He tore up the field in classic Vermaelen style. That was always his strength, really.
It was, if I've got it right here, it was a 2-1 win over Newcastle in March 2012. Robin van Persie equalised a minute after Hatem Ben Arfa had scored for Newcastle in the first half, and then we scored that goal. So
that's right, and that was particularly sweet because that was the game with Tim Krul and the time wasting.
Yes. Was that the one where Van Persie presented him the ball afterwards? Or?
Yes, yeah. I believe so. God. I believe so. Before Van Persie went to the dark side.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Before we took delight in how much of a dick Van Persie was.
Yeah, different days, different days. But what else to say in this part about the game yesterday? I mean, I suppose just what you think it might mean moving forward. How big a result do you think that is in the context of the title race?
I think sometimes you need a result like this to give you a spark or to give you confidence and belief again. And I'm hoping that's the case with this one. You know, you could analyze the shit out of the performance. I don't think it's really necessary to do that. I think you've got to look at this as a result and what the result might mean. And we've got some big, big games coming up. We've got some very difficult away games coming up. And I think if we hadn't won this game at home, you know, the weight of that pressure would be building and building. We'd be 5 points behind Leicester now. We'd be how many? 2 points be three? 2 points behind Tottenham. You know, that kind of pressure would start to build. Instead, you know, we've closed the gap on Leicester now. You know, they were looking at this as going, hey, we could be 8 points clear of Arsenal if we win this game today. Instead, it's 2 points. You know, so that, I think, will have an effect on them. The fuckers. And, you know, I think for us, it's a result that should really spark some momentum and hopefully take us into those difficult away games in good shape.
Yeah, I think it should, and I think it can. I mean, look, we've got a difficult period coming up in terms of the fixtures we face, but it's very exciting to be part of a title race with some unfamiliar contenders, definitely.
Mm, yeah.
Or too familiar in some cases.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they are. I mean, Man City, what a bag of shit they are.
I know. Well, I mean, you almost wonder how... It's very difficult, isn't it, when a manager announces they're going? Very rarely.
Oh, no, hang on. No. He didn't really announce that he was going. He was put in a position where Manchester City had to confirm their new manager. I mean, who could have thought that making your manager a lame duck mid-season could have a negative effect on your team? I mean, what the fuck?
Well, this is it.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, I suppose to an extent it was always going to be the case. whether they went public with it or not, you know, everyone kind of knew in the background it was a done deal. But I think taking it public makes it that much harder for him to retain some authority. So, I mean, I'll be honest, though, quite glad to see them fall away, because when I look at the top four, I still think they've got the strongest squad, arguably. So maybe no bad thing to see them fall by the wayside.
All right. Well, look, will that do it for part one, do you think?
I think it ought to. Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a break and come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. A very happy, cheery, good-natured Arscast Extra so far, James?
So far, who knows? It could take a turn.
Well,
stay tuned.
Yeah, you never know. But, you know, we'll try not to focus on the anger at the Leicester fuckers. Oh, did you see what happened yesterday?
Well, that's a very broad question.
It is. Lots of things happened in lots of places in the world. Many events took
what
place.
What particularly are you referring to?
Well, I'm referring to the fact that I got a picture taken with Robert Pires.
Well, I did see. In fact, my first question was going to be from Charlotte, who's at Charlotte_EVVNT, who says, how much more dreamy is at Pires Robert 7 in real life? Hashtag dreamboat.
Much more dreamy.
He's even dreamier.
I'm very, very smiley and happy. And, you know, I didn't really get a chance to talk to him because, you know, he was a busy man. He was going about his business and he was very kind to stop just for a moment to shake hands and get a quick picture. And I might have muttered something like, I love you so much. But I can't be sure because I was sort of starstruck by the whole thing. But yeah, very dreamy, still looks in incredible shape. Like, really good shape. I think probably he could do a job for us if we needed him, you know?
Well, he's still training, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's ready to go.
Yeah, he is. And, he was very, very dreamy, and it was a very special, nice
moment.
Was
this pre-match or post-match?
Post-match. So everyone was in great form.
All the more cheery.
All the more cheery. Yeah, it was fantastic. It was fantastic. So I didn't say to him, "Hi, I'm Arsblog," and stuff like that. I just thought that would be a bit weird, you know.
No, of course, but he probably knew. He probably didn't want to seem like a super fan, but I reckon he knew.
There's a great comment actually. Go on, sorry. Go on. What was your comment?
No. You do yours first. Mine's a separate issue.
I posted the picture on Facebook, and hang on. There's a great comment here from Matt Farrell. And Matt says, after I posted the picture, he's going, who are they? I don't recognize either of them. That's how famous they are. And then he cue keyboard warrior abuse coming my way. And the guy, Michael Kartanen, says, the guy on the left was in Take That, and the guy on the right still is. They're running a semi-successful lawnmower rental business together. Also, the guy on the right is an avid Mormon, as can be easily seen by his suit. Matt comes back and says, is the one on the left Robert Pires? And Min Kwan Nguyen says, don't be silly. Robert Pires was never part of Take That. Which I like.
As far as we know, he's probably writing the songs behind the scenes, I imagine. He's a man of many gifts.
He sure is.
What's just occurred to me was, remember how we were all angry at Sky for moving the game?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wrote an open letter. There was all sorts. We were all kicking off. But had the game been on Saturday and had Danny Welbeck had one less training session, would he have been in the squad and been able to come on and score the winning goal?
Wow. Well, thank you, Sky. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Sky. Thanks for inconveniencing us all massively.
Oh, you're so kind. By your moving, you have helped us win this game, and we thoroughly retract all the criticisms of you. No, we don't. You're cunts. You're like Leicester.
We don't. And how dare they try and take credit for
but
it?
But, I mean, it's interesting, though. It is interesting to consider that. And, of course, the protest that the Leicester fans had had planned, well, didn't take place at all. Like, not even by the away end, by 5 minutes before kickoff, the away end was absolutely packed, completely full, and they weren't protesting at all. There was a couple of songs, I think, at some point, something about Sky, Greedy Bastards, or whatever it might have been, but that was it.
Shame. Yeah. Shame. Unless it was all just full of Sky employees, you know, sitting in the Leicester seats as a cover-up.
All right. Is it my question? Will I do it?
I guess so. Yeah, why not?
Okay. This one comes from Senkwe Chanda, at Senkwe. And he wants to know, very simply, what's going on with Alexis?
What a question. I don't know. So what games has he played since he's been back to Lexus? He's had 3 or 4 appearances, is it?
Yes, he has. He has. I'll get them up here now if you want to, you know, keep talking there. So he's played. Okay. He played in the Burnley game.
Okay, he scored, did he not?
He did, and that was good.
Lovely goal.
Good goal. And then he played in the 0-0 draw with Southampton, and then he played in the 2-0 win over Bournemouth. And he also played in the 2-1 win over Leicester yesterday. So since returning to the squad, Arsenal are unbeaten with Alexis in the side. They've won 3, drawn 1, and he scored one of the goals. But I get where he's coming from, because he doesn't quite look his normal self, does he?
No, but I think if there's anything we've learnt about Alexis in his time with Arsenal is that he can be a bit... he can be a little bit streaky, can't he? Like a lot of goal scorers, his goals tend to come in clutches. I mean, I'm looking at a spell, you know, between the last Leicester game back in the end of September and the Watford game in mid-October, where he scored, it was about 10 goals in about 8 games, wasn't it? He was absolutely on fire in that time, including for Chile. And then since then, he's actually only scored against Dynamo Zagreb and Burnley in what looks like more than a dozen appearances. So he's actually not on a great run of form either side of the injury.
Yeah.
And I think he probably just needs to, I don't know, get a bit of confidence back. He seems like a player who thrives when he's got that absolute belief in himself, and maybe that's not quite there yet.
Sure. I think what he could also do with... I thought he combined quite well with Monreal a few times yesterday down the left, and Monreal got in behind and put in some good deliveries. But I think what might be interesting for him is to add a little bit of variety to what he's doing with the ball when he's got it wide on that left, particularly around the penalty area. It was obvious that he was going to come in on his right foot every time.
Yeah,
and the defenders knew that, and they defended against it really well. They didn't give him any space for a shot. So maybe trying to mix things up a little bit might work, or add that touch of unpredictability to his game, which was so effective last season. I think you're right, though. It'll come with confidence and form. He got a couple of bad kicks yesterday as well. There was one he got early in the game, and there was another one in the second period where afterwards he was standing sort of on the edge of their D, holding his legs, and he looked to be in quite a bit of pain. So maybe there's still some, you know, some physical issues, some fitness issues that he's not quite back up to speed yet. I think it'll come, and I think we're, you know, a more dangerous attacking side with Alexis in it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think I've no idea what I think, actually. Oh, yeah, he's always the victim of that sort of treatment from defenders.
Yeah.
I think when Simpson went off and Vasilevsky came on as a right-back, he's not the most mobile player, and you thought Alexis could really get at him. And the fact that he didn't probably shows you that he's not quite at the top of his game. But there's a couple of fixtures coming up, particularly that Barcelona one, which you feel if anything's going to bring the best out of him, it might just be that.
Yeah, well, hopefully. Just while we were talking about that, I was just thinking of a nice moment at the end of the game when the players were coming off at the tunnel. Mikel Arteta was standing there right at the tunnel, giving everyone high fives and hugs and everything. It was nice to see. And obviously, you know, he's not been involved for quite a while now. And you do wonder if something has happened injury-wise to him, because he's not even been in the squad. But it was
I think something may well have done physically because, you know, he's been so unfortunate with that recently, and it does feel like it's all catching up with him a bit. But nice that he, you know, Arsene always talks about what an influential member of the squad he is, even when he's not playing, and good to see that in action.
This is just before you go on to your next question. We had one from David McNamara, who said, which rates higher, Gunnar Blog's Trekkies and Kens in the park style, or Bobby Pires just come from the gym chic? There's only one winner here, James, and it's not you.
It's not going to be me,
is
it?
It's not you, no.
No, fair enough. I've been wearing a tracksuit for a full week because I've been mainly working in a warehouse. I fit in beautifully. Nonetheless, let's have another question. It's from Sammy Azam Ali, and he asks, are Ramsey and Coquelin a viable pairing, or is it too soon to say?
Maybe too soon, but I think it was clearly more effective than Ramsey and Flamini yesterday. You could have some sense that Coquelin was going to sit and shield his back four. And you just don't have that. I loved what you wrote about Flamini last week. You know, when you're talking about, okay, look, he might be sitting in front of the back four, or he might be in the opposition box trying to score. So not box to box midfielder, box or box midfielder. Yeah. And yeah. I think that's very accurate. Funny, but accurate. And yesterday, Coquelin certainly sat deeper. You know, he does have that bit more defensive awareness than Flamini, bit quicker across the ground. He seemed to work. I haven't looked yet at any of the passing combinations. I don't know whether the two of them really gelled in that sense. I'll look that up now when you come back in on this. But I thought it has the makings of a much more effective partnership than the other one.
Yes, I think so. I think, Coquelin's a superior player to Flamini for starters, so I think that helps. But I thought Ramsey was very good yesterday. I almost thought that Coquelin's presence maybe made Ramsey a little more effective. He drove us forward at times, and the only thing lacking in his game was finishing. His shooting was a bit wayward, but he really helped, particularly in that last half hour, to keep the momentum up by continually being positive in his play. And just on Coquelin, I mean, Magnus Holmberg asked, how much did you enjoy the cynical foul made by Coquelin on Mahrez on the halfway line? And the answer for me was enormously. I mean, that was a super smart, super effective tactical foul, which is exactly what you need from that sort of player.
Yeah.
He took Mahrez out. You know, he recognised that we were vulnerable on the counter-attack, and he took a yellow card and protected his back four. And ultimately, it might have played a part in him coming off, but it also might have played a part in us not conceding a goal there and staying in the game.
Yeah, particularly against a team that likes to break. You know, there are good yellow cards. And, you know, if we want to talk about the spirit of the game and all that kind of stuff what have you. But, you know, you've got to do it because everyone else does it. And maybe that's true then of the penalty thing. I don't know. Does that make me a hypocrite when it comes to the penalty thing? I don't know. I think there's probably something, you know, the rules allow for fouls, right? In the sense that, you know, you're cautioned. You're sanctioned for making a foul like that. You get a yellow card. Whereas, you know, the penalty thing is just just a racist guy cheating.
Yeah. I guess both are cynical, but there's no deceit in what Coughlan does. I don't think it's a.
It's pretty obvious.
Yeah, I don't think he sort of. I can't remember, but I don't think he claimed to have got the ball. It was very much, yes, I have done this. The yellow card is the requisite punishment. Whereas with Vardy thing, there is a sort of. Maybe the reason we feel more comfortable about it is because there's an attempt to pull the wool over someone's eyes. Mm. Nonetheless, how did you get on with those stats?
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, look, Ramsey and Coughlan, in terms of passing, Ramsey passed to Coughlan 8 times, but he also passed to 5 players more than that. So he passed, his top pass was to Sanchez, then Ozil, then Monreal, then Bellerin, then Oxlade-Chamberlain, then Coughlan. I have to look at what Coughlan did with the ball. Pass Congo from Coughlan. Coughlan to Monreal, Mertesacker, Ramsey. So more or less the same amount of passes. So yeah, he was quite happy to take the ball and give it to give it to the fullback or give it to Ramsey a little bit. So yeah, look, you know, I think the signs were there that this could be a partnership that works. Given the players we have at our disposal, I think it's the best partnership that we've got. And you know, we'll see how they go after a few more games.
Okay.
Oh, was that a beeping?
I don't know. Did you hear a beep?
I heard beeping. Was it Laurie? Was that Laurie?
No, Laurie, surely. Maybe it is.
He's found you.
He's come to visit.
Oh!
Wow.
Hi,
truly,
Laurie.
Truly, this is a special day. The Laurie's decided to show up.
It's amazing.
He's got a big red bow around him.
Oh, you see what Danny Welbeck's goal has done? It sort of righted the universe a little bit.
I know. And on Valentine's Day as well.
That was yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I forget. It's difficult when you don't get any post to remember. I had no reminders.
Yeah.
what was I going to say? Yes, I think I've finished talking about Ramsey and Coughlan. Have you got another question?
Yeah, I do. I've got one from Steve Oakley at Stephen Oakley 1. And he wants to know, why don't refs do anything about blatant time wasting? They'll maybe book the keeper in the 91st minute.
Yeah, and the time added on is never really more than 4, is it?
How did we not have more than 4 minutes yesterday? I'm not complaining because obviously we got the goal, but think about it. There was all the time wasting. There were how many substitutions? 3 from Arsenal.
I think there may have been 6.
6, yeah. So Leicester, they had a doubler, so, you know, that could take a little bit off that.
Let's say 5 substitutions.
What about when the guy got sent off? Like, he didn't go off the pitch for about 2 minutes. He was standing there arguing with the referee as if somehow he was going to change his mind. So that was another, you know, it should probably have been about 14 minutes.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm glad there wasn't that because we'd have scored and then we'd have had, you know, the potential for an Aboué Liverpool moment there somewhere.
Too much time to concede. That's always the concern. Mm. I don't know why they don't. I mean, that's the only way you could punish it, really, isn't it? But then, as you say, that punishment can actually be a reward. Like, if they had an extra couple of minutes, they might have tried to get back in the game.
Mm. Yeah.
How do you do that? If a team is particularly guilty of time wasting, do you have to have a rule whereby if the other team scores in stoppage time, that they can choose to end the game at any point?
I think that should be the case because, you know, they're the ones that wasted all that time.
Yeah.
So they should be punished then for behaving like twats.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Okay. I mean, on the football pitch or in a torture chamber? What are you?
No, just on the football pitch because that will affect them the most. I mean, I was saying it to somebody with about half an hour to go. I was going, he's got to book Schmeichel now because if he books him in the 88th minute, it makes no difference. But if a goalkeeper is booked with half an hour to go for time wasting, which he was, you know, moving the ball across, clanging his studs off the posts every time, you know, that whole thing, you know, the production of taking a goal kick. All you have to do is run up and fucking kick the ball. It's not that complicated. You don't need to get yourself in the zone. You're not like a rugby player trying to kick a goal, are you? You're just trying to fucking kick the ball as far as you can. And man,
and
he really
just booting it.
He really does kick the ball a long way.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. I mean, every time you could sort of hear these plaintive cries. I think it was David Ospina. just weeping softly to himself, going, I can't do that. I can't. But no, he hammers it. I mean, it ends up, you know, some of his good kicks end up practically on the edge of the opposition penalty area, you know, which is a lot. That's a long way to kick a football.
That is a hell of a long way.
He must have very well-developed thigh muscles and calf muscles.
I'm sure he does. Mm. I'm sure he does. His dad kicks it a long way as well. It's genetic.
Yeah, it's all that bacon.
Genetic kicking.
Mm. It's all the bacon, you see.
Mm.
Do you remember his bacon ad?
I do. I eat a lot of bacon, though, and I can't kick it that far. Can anyone explain that?
You're not very good at kicking?
That's what it is.
Yeah,
that is what it is. Well, to be fair.
Wow. Glad that didn't take a huge amount of analysis. But
we got there quick.
Yeah, so,
What are we talking about? Punishing them. Yes, I wish refs would clamp down. I think you're absolutely right. They have to clamp down earlier in games, don't they? Mm. That's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
Start giving out these bookings. I think any sort of in the second half.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, it just means then that they can't continue to do it. Like, I don't think they're ever going to send a player off for time wasting. I mean, you know, no goalkeeper is going to get himself sent off for that, because you would take the kicks a bit quicker, you know. But it's pointless doing it in the last couple of minutes, because it makes no difference then, you know, if they've got away with it for ages. So there you go.
Speaking of bookings, what did you make of Danny Welbeck's reaction to his yellow card after the goal?
It was great. Like, whatever. Yeah, who gives a fuck? I mean, in fairness, by the letter of the law, perhaps there could have been some red cards.
Right.
Because Ramsey went in there, didn't he? And he'd been booked.
God, yeah.
And who else was booked? I don't think anyone else was booked, but...
Not sure.
Yeah. It would have been very harsh.
Very harsh to start dismissing people after those celebrations.
Yeah. It was a great celebration, though. It really was. Worth a yellow card, for sure.
I mean, I enjoyed that yellow card even more than the one Coughlan got for his cynical foul. Okay. Have I got a question? Yes.
I don't know. Yeah, it's you. Yeah.
Okay. Michael Higgins at Higgsy06 says, can Welbeck's return to the squad provide that as good as a new signing boost that we need to win the title?
No, the old like a new signing. Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know if it can do that, but it's great to have him back and to have those options. Like, I mean, if you go back a few weeks, maybe not much more than that, you look at our bench and we would have a bench of Debushi, Gibbs, Gabriel, Chambers, maybe. You know, you got four defenders.
And the Jeff.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't really. I mean, as good as and as talented as Iwobi is, and I think he is, and obviously the Jeff has the potential to be the greatest player of all time. Mm. You know, maybe it's just a bit too soon to expect him to produce. But you know, to be able to do what we did, like, you know, the old days, Bergkamp and Henry. We need a goal. Lash on the old Wiltord there. Right, Wiltord's on. Now take off a fullback and put on Kanu. All right. And, you know, you essentially end up blunderbussing the opposition to the point where you get goals. And it's often worked for us, simply because when you apply that much pressure up front, that something cracks.
Yeah.
And that was the case. And, you know, it's hard to be definitive, obviously, about what's going to happen between now and the end of the season, because there's such a lot of football to play and some very important games and very difficult games. But, you know, you feel more confident going into them, knowing that you've got guys who can score off the bench. And I think it was interesting as well that Walcott came on and scored off the bench. And I'm not saying that, you know, that particular role is one that should be his forever or anything like that. But perhaps we're looking at what Walcott is actually best suited to, is coming off and bringing something different to the attack. Welbeck can come off the bench and score goals. We know that Giroud can come off the bench and score goals because he did it in the early part of the season, didn't he? You know?
Yeah.
And when Walcott was being picked, he would come on and score goals. So I think to have those threats from the bench is very important. And, you know, ideally you'd want to be scoring more goals without having to resort to your bench. But having the options there to bring on, well, it's really good. So, yeah, I'm hopeful that he can kick on from there. And, you know, that will certainly give him plenty of confidence, won't it? You know, having come back after 10 months out, score the goal, and all of a sudden, you know, he's just lifted to be back in and feeling part of things again, rather than sort of going, oh, it's been 6 games back, 8 games back, I haven't scored. You know, I think that will be a positive thing as well.
Definitely, definitely. And it gives us another attacking weapon, another option. And a guy who can be useful, I think, in the wide positions as well. You know, from a team perspective, if you've got difficult away games coming up, you know, we've got to go to the Nou Camp, places like that. Wouldn't surprise me enormously to see, if he's fit enough, Welbeck drafted in for a match like that, because he does do so much defensive work and have that great team ethic. So I think he's going to be very useful in the coming weeks.
Yes, yes. Okay, here's a question from Bellerin's right peg. He's at Patrico Zab. And he says, he wants to know, this is a good question, this. He's going, what did you think of Messi copying the Pires-Henry penalty and getting it horribly wrong?
Do you know what? I haven't seen it.
You haven't?
No. Tell me.
Okay, so I'm sitting in a bar in Stansted Airport last night.
Okay.
Stansted Airport, by the way, has the worst connectivity of any place on earth. Mobile phones don't work in there. You don't get any network. So you can barely make a call, or you can barely, you know, there's no data on your phone. So I was trying to do a bit of work, but couldn't do it. I signed up for Stansted Airport Wi-Fi, which I assume is one guy standing at one end of the airport and another guy standing at the other end, and they've got a tin can each. And they're trying to provide Wi-Fi in that way, because that doesn't fucking work either. £9 it cost as well. I thought, well, hey, at least I'll get some, you know, decent Wi-Fi. What a load of shit. So Stansted Airport, fuck you. You are the Leicester City of airports. Sort that shit out.
Okay, so I'll have a word.
You live close by, so go have a word.
Okay.
So I'm sitting in a bar, because if it was there quite early, my flight wasn't until 10 o'clock. And having a gin and tonic, watching the football, Barcelona versus Celta Vigo.
Going, yes,
I'll throw a beady eye over upcoming opposition, see if they're any good. You know, nobody's really heard of this Barcelona.
Do some scouting.
Team. Do a little bit of scouting, yeah, exactly. See what the fuss is about this front three they have that's supposed to be so amazing. And, they were fucking, they were unbelievably good. Unbelievably good.
Right.
But Messi wins a penalty. I think it was, they were 4-1 up at the time. Messi steps up.
I'm watching it right now.
Yeah, Messi steps up to take the penalty, trickles the ball to his right a little bit. In comes Luis Suarez and just finishes into the bottom right corner. The keeper's going, what the fuck? And they score a goal. Right?
He's got it all wrong.
You're supposed to just mess it up and then stand there looking at each other.
Tap it. Yeah. I mean, look, Barcelona can try all they want. They'll never be Arsenal. They'll never be Messi and Suarez will never be Pires and Henry. And they've shown that. They've shown that last night. I'm watching it now. Suarez gets it all wrong. He runs onto the ball correctly. Messi's put the right weight on it. He finishes it. He puts it past the goalkeeper into the net. They score a goal, Andrew. They've got it all wrong.
Fucking bullshit is what it is.
Yeah.
What are they?
Nice try to pay homage to our attempt, but.
Yeah,
I'm afraid it pales in comparison.
A little more training groundwork needed there, Messi and Suarez, whoever you are.
Yeah.
What do you think about that as a penalty? You know, given that they're 4-1 up at the time, are they not just being cunts?
Maybe. I mean, the thing is.
Is it beautiful and inventive and you know, all that's good and pure with football? Or is it just not being like wankers when Messi could just take it and score?
At least we had the good grace to miss. That's what I'll say. but no, I think it's... do you know what? It's quite a handy way of scoring, isn't it? I mean, if you get it right, the keeper's already committed, aren't they? So effectively, you've got yourself a little open goal.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. But, you know, at the same time, it's a penalty. So
it's quite a good chance already, isn't it?
Just take the fucking penalty. That's my thinking on it. You know, I don't want to be overly cynical. I love, you know, stuff that's great, but I think that's just kind of rubbing it in a bit.
Maybe. I think in a friendly or whatever, you know, it's fine, but I guess it's not the nicest. How did you feel about it when we tried it?
Thought it was stupid.
It was stupid.
You just take the fucking it's a penalty. It's like almost the best chance you can have at scoring a goal, apart from being like, you know, clean through with the keeper flatting his arse behind you. It's like 12 yards and you have a great chance of scoring a goal. And it's relatively easy to score a penalty, in my opinion. Sure. Particularly when you are one of the greatest footballers that the world has ever seen.
I think Messi could have scored that penalty, yeah. I think he probably could have scored it himself. If he really tried.
It was probably within his grasp. But hey, there you go. They were frighteningly good, though, I have to say. Watching them. Well. It was just like, oh, it's 2-1. Oh, there's still a game here. And I think there was a fairly decent Celta Vigo chance. A guy went through on goal and keeper made a save. And you're thinking, hey, you know, maybe this Barcelona side are a bit... Oh, fuck. Oh, Jesus.
Do you think they might be better than Leicester?
Yeah, slightly. I was glad it was a double gin and tonic, I have to say.
Sure. Oh, dear. Well, look, you know, I'm sure it'll be a breeze. Yep. We beat Leicester. Everything's possible now.
Exactly. Go on, one more from you. Have you got another one?
Maybe. Let's have a look. Mm. Well, let's do this. Does the fixture list from now up till April give you the shivers as it does me? That's from Neil Gagoy.
Sure.
Let's have a look at it. What is it? Is it pretty ugly?
Well, we've got Hull in the FA Cup coming up this weekend.
That's fine. We have that every year.
That's grand. So we've got then Barcelona at home on Tuesday.
Easy. Yeah. Cakewalk.
Manchester United away.
At Old Trafford. We've got a terrific record there. I can't see any problems.
Really do. Okay, and then we've got Swansea at home.
Okay, that is genuinely a winnable game.
Okay, so that's a Wednesday, but
although,
haven't
Saturday. They beaten us at the Emirates a couple of times? Swansea.
They have.
Yeah.
Lioni scored the goal, didn't he? The big cat guy.
He did, the big cat man.
Yeah. So that's happening on a Wednesday, and then on the Saturday, we've got a game against Tottenham, away from home. What a big game that is this season.
That really is. Mm. That really is a huge game. And then before the end of the month, trips to Barcelona and Everton.
Mm.
I mean, is February and March the new...
November and January?
January, which is the new November, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, and we've got to go to West Ham away as well. And obviously Man City away, the second last day of the season. So look, it is what it is. You know, you've got to play these teams at some point in the season. You've got to play these fixtures at some point. You'd prefer perhaps if they were a little bit more spaced out, but... what can you do? Just get on with them. We are in absolutely one game at a time territory, aren't we?
We certainly are now. Yeah. Mm. One game at a time, please. And look, I mean, the advantage of them all being stacked up like terrifying dominoes is that if we do win some of them, we'll have terrific momentum.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the positive spin, guys.
That is. And, you know, I worry a little about the Champions League and the effect that might have on confidence and momentum and belief. But, you know, at the same time, if you can get a result against a Barcelona side,
I mean, if we can get a goal against them, I'll be quite pleased.
All right, here's a final question. This comes from JLF, who's at John L. Foster.
Yeah.
And he wants to know, James, would you rather have Arteta's perfect hair or Mesut Ozil's perfect balls?
Wow.
Because Arsene Wenger said after Mesut Ozil, he was talking about the free kick. He said, I saw Mesut taking it. I thought we had a chance there because his balls are top quality.
Well, I don't think anyone would argue with that. But I have to say, as a man with a rapidly receding hairline, the perfect hair holds too much allure for me. Given that I'm not a professional footballer or ball model, I will take the hair. I think it'll be more useful to me in my day-to-day life.
Yeah.
What about yourself?
I don't know. I think I'd prefer perfect balls.
Okay.
You know, it would be great to have perfect balls.
It would be nice.
Because sometimes my balls are a bit, you know... lumping.
Skew whiff.
Yeah.
They don't have the right... They don't float like Gerzel's.
No, exactly. But you need to have the pace on them.
Yeah.
Got to get the whip, you know.
Be careful with that whip, mate. You've got too much whip on the balls.
Yeah, you know. Everyone loves a good whipped balls. I think I'd like that, you know. Because that then, even in my very, very low-level career of football at this point in my life, you know, to be able to... To be able to get my perfect balls out in every game, I think I'd enjoy that.
To get Danny Welbeck's forehead just flicking gently against them. Perfect.
Exactly. All right. Well, look, will we call it a day? Anything else you want to talk about or discuss? Or
No news this time. That's it. I'm going back to normal life.
Right.
Let's call it a day and a lovely day at that.
A very, very lovely day, because yesterday was fantastic and hugely enjoyable. And, yeah, I guess we can just, like, watch GIFs and YouTubes and, oh, the Petr Cech drag back on Vardy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. GIF material, if ever there was some.
Yeah, that was really good. Someone needs to create one of those where Vardy just keeps sliding and it just slides across the earth out the stadium, you know, sliding across the Serengeti, sliding into Tokyo, going, uh-oh, shit, they don't like me here. Bollocks. Yeah. Should have put the brakes on.
That would be lovely. Please do, send it in. We'll probably retweet it.
Yes, we definitely will. All right, well, listen, thank you as ever for listening. Much appreciated. We'll be back with another Arsecast Extra next Monday, talking about the FA Cup. And I'll be here with an Arsecast on Friday, looking ahead to that game and looking back on everything else that's happened this week. So until then, take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.